This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Hit it.
You know, it's crazy, like, you know, Tin Can Phone, it started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept, like, our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over, you know what I'm saying? We lost our mind and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue. Tin Can Phone.
Did that time and I bounced back. Had us in the beanies, now snapback. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas and the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs. Close to really fast. Messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas in the lines. Yeah, respect to get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, I ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spread with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with the wop. We all on K-Boo talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Poppin' knowledge like petrol, who got the gas? Blue went to work, tryna hear from my past. Politicking on the yard, tryna touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters and the sav. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, coolin' ain't with the cuddling. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch.
Please. Tin Can Phone in this mother. This your boy Misfit Adi, season 2. Hey, Blue. Whew. Photo shoot fresh, huh? First day of school, cool, huh? Yeah. What's happening, brother? What's happening?
Please hit that up like a pro, man. As always, good to see you. Good to see everybody. Man, life is good. Doing the best I can out here, just like navigating the world and feeling good. So we're going to talk about a little bit of, you know, starting our own businesses and working for ourselves, and that's something that's on my mind, so I'm excited for this episode. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Of course, I don't know. There we go. We're leaving it in. Obviously, when you were giving your intro, I was like, I'm doing great, and then, you know, the music is playing from the background like I'm an amateur. But no, I'm doing pretty good. Today is tax day for the timestamp world, so filed that extension. And also, yeah, like when I got all my forms together, it was just like, no, but you know, other than that, doing pretty good. Super excited today. We have a very special guest, Robert. Robert is a friend from my childhood. We lived about 5 doors down from each other, probably less, and was an interesting inspiration. I was visiting home after my first year kind of doing work at CRCI. And it wasn't until then that I realized that I did have a relationship to someone who experienced an incarceral context. And so I thought it'd be really cool to bring them on the show. And when I was talking to a friend of mine, he had made the particular kind of speculative awareness and analysis that people, you can tell where they, there's this statistical projection where your area code can dictate like whatever achievements you experience in life. And so then he said, but even that doesn't apply because we live 5 down doors down from each other and our access to things is different. So Robert, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I'm in sunny California, you know, the weather's always nice. Life is good, man. It's getting better anyway. That's what I can say.
Sure. Yeah, that's
definitely
good.
Rough there for some years, but it's getting better.
Great. Yeah, how many years are you out?
It's been about 3.
Wow. So fresh leaning.
Yeah, it's interesting because the first year is just passes by very quickly. That time is very much an adjustment period. And then it's kind of like only from there do you really kind of start making progress and saving up money again and building like a resume and all, you know, the important things in life, I guess. So yeah, it takes a little bit of time, but I'd say I'm doing all right. I have a pretty good understanding, I feel like, of the economy and just money in general, and I don't like live beyond my means. So I just, you know, only spend like what I need to for the most part, and because of that, like, it just affords me to be able to actually spend money on stuff that I don't need when it comes the time. Like, I can actually do stuff that I want, you know. I don't know, like, for instance, you know, I was able to take a couple months off this year. Like, a lot of people out here can't do that. Like, they just, the cost of living is way too high. but they spend all their money on rent, and I'm just living a little bit of a different lifestyle. I'm just doing whatever works for me, you know what I mean? So, but as we were just starting to touch base on a little bit before, starting, you know, my own business, I'm thinking that that's really kind of a good opportunity for me to maybe get a little bit ahead. It's tough sometimes just straight up trading time for money, and you're just getting a set rate per hour, or you're just getting a set salary per year. Like, a lot of people feel like there's not a lot of potential for growth in that, like, environment. So, you know, when you start your own business, you do have the potential for growth. You know, you can hire people, you can advertise, so on and so forth. You can get better at your techniques, or, you know, save time, whatever the field it is that you're in. So, you know, I don't know. I've just
always said my internet is unstable for some reason. So you mentioned starting your own business, and I see the light in your eyes. Your eyes light up when you speak on starting your own business. Did you already have the mindset of running your own business, starting your own business pre-incarceration, or was there a point after that you said, you know what, I'm doing it? One thing that I realized is fear usually is one of the top things that stops people from diving into or investing their all, right? But ultimately, the knowledge, where did you obtain the knowledge and heart and bravery?
Well, first of all, I guess that's kind of you to say all of that. It's interesting because half of my family, they are very much the typical, you know, 9-to-5 work people. And then half my family, they actually have been entrepreneurs. So there is some history of that around, you know, in my family. And I feel like some of it's learned behavior, even just kind of being around them. My grandparents used to have record stores in DC, family business. Everyone worked there. So my mom, my uncle, so her brother, and then their sister, all three of them, they all worked there at that record store. And I, you know, I knew that they were very successful at it. And now I know that you don't need to have a brick and mortar store anymore. You don't need to have the overhead of a traditional store the way it used to be. It's actually a lot easier to get into business these days. In some ways it's more difficult, there's more regulation, but in a lot of ways it's easier because there's been so many people that have paved the path before us that you know, it's just kind of like the processes are simplified at this point.
So the knowledge side, you grew up able to bless to see ownership in your family. I think that's important because most of the time, so personally, I'm just coming up in an inner city, you know, Providence neighborhood. We don't see ownership. We don't see even like the closest we get is our parents being able to get cigarettes and beer on credit from the dude at the store. You know, to us, it's like, wow, they're powerful. They like, we can go to the store and mom just get that herself with no money type situation, not really understanding what it looks like. So speaking on your area code dictating your success, I wonder.
Always with the wisdom over there, Quees.
Yeah, well, it makes me wonder, y'all grew up so close to each other, right? The area code, but the knowledge of seeing ownership, recognizing ownership compared to just seeing the drug dealers or the pimps or the hustlers or whoever being the ones that be the influence. So I wonder if how much it plays into one's psyche when recognizing ownership, when you know your grandparents, like, this is ours, like my whole family works here. This is in your head, you are already being programmed in. I hate the word trained. Train just seems so bad to me, but you're being programmed.
It is in, programming.
You know, into ownership. So I feel like, do you feel that's an advantage in any way? And is that part of like what I wonder if that's like an advantage for you in any way?
You know, so I say that, but that was two generations ago, and those people are no longer with us. And it's interesting because the people who are still here in my family, none of them like know the first thing about business, and they're fighting against me. And I'm the one that's like, no, like, I know my worth and I know that I can do this. It's crazy, honestly, but they're so traditional minded that it's hard for them to think that someone can really step out of, you know, that 9-to-5 job and working for someone else. And
which is interesting.
I don't know. I mean,
you had a bunch of jobs, right? Like when I ran into you, and I think it's funny that you say 3 years. I was thinking maybe it was longer, but I think when I ran into you, you were like just out, and I was like, my mind was a little blown. It was like, but you know, you, when I saw you, you were like, I gotta get a job, I gotta do all this stuff. And you were like very eager in a way that, you know, at the time I had spent a lot of time with guys inside, and you could see the difference. And like some guys were even like, I see my slip ahead of me, you know, like they just couldn't even.
What does that mean?
Like they knew that they were gonna pick it up somehow. Like they just, they were struggling. And you know, so it's totally different with when I saw you when you first got out, you were just so tenacious. So between when you got out, you had a bunch of jobs. You wanna talk about that a little bit? Or I'm actually curious to hear you talk about it and have the guys.
I'll actually cut in a little bit because you're skimming past an important issue. I actually had a lot more drive beforehand. Forced to be sedentary for the better part of a decade. And it's just simple physics. You know, a body in motion stays in motion. A body at rest stays at rest. For years, literally the most exercise I would get would be walking from the bed to the toilet and back. It's like, it was fucked up. Because any time that they would like let us out, basically like there would be like stabbings, and then the whole thing would just get locked down again. And like, it just, it never got better. Like, it didn't matter how much time had passed. It'd be 4 months, 6 months, a year. It doesn't matter. As soon as they let you out, like everyone's coming back like with red all over their shirts. And I didn't even go out there, honestly, like, because they're just like letting like 200 people out into like from their smaller cage to their like bigger cage. And I'm like, and they're calling that recreation time. And I'm like, I don't get anything out of that. So like, I would just like, I didn't participate in all that, honestly. I kept to myself. I never fed into the culture. That was a big thing. And I had family at home. So like, when I could, or when I did, like I could speak to someone on the outside world, I could keep like my mind, like have some sanity to it. Like everyone got wrapped up in like just what's right in front of them, and they can't see like, look, this is just temporary. Like this is just a temporary condition of man. Like, unfortunately, this is the condition you're in.
Not for
like,
everybody.
F- man.
Don't, nah, but look, not even people who got life. Some people sign up for a lifetime back and forth trip, you know what I'm saying? And it's the, no, it's the do what I know best mindset. I always talk about that, because when you go out to do what you know best, you're gonna end up where you ended up last time. So a lot of guys, that's where their identity come from.
I've heard those words. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
off.
Yeah,
no. But a lot of guys, that's where their identity are. Like I try to explain this to my partner too. Like there's a saying, I'm gonna go where I'm celebrated, not tolerated, right?
Right.
So when you go in there, some guys, that's the only place that they're like f***ing the guy, you know?
You can be anyone you want there. Because it's so hard to check on, like fact check on
well,
you.
Well,
just
not even that. It doesn't even have to be that, because I say we because I just am a representation of the boys, the guys that's in there. Like, even though I've been home, like I am them and they are me. So I say we. And we are okay with standing around and lying to each other and just telling stories. You know what I'm saying? And that's where the first origin of Tin Can Phone came from, is a Great American Stories, because literally that's what we do. We stand around in these circles in our groups and we lie to each other about the shit we was doing out there. And we are okay with that. And that's where my change came from. You know, like that's when I signed up for college and started doing all the schooling and different things, because I was like, why would I know you capping. I know you lying. Why would I just go to the yard and just sit here and lie to each other about what we was doing, knowing neither one of us was doing the things that we're saying? You know what I'm saying? But some people, that's their, man, that's my guy, whoever. Like, you're back, bro. You're home. You know? And that's where they celebrate it.
Studying, and I'm trying to better myself, but I hear you. You're right. People are.
But then some choose to go to school. Some choose to go in there, and you know, some people say it's a tour. know what I'm saying? Just like going on a tour, we say it's college, you know what I'm saying? Because some people could go in there and who has an identity, who already know who they are, who's not persuaded by the culture of what it is. Boredom, though, and everybody know boredom, idle hands is the work of the devil, right? You get bored in there. Like, it's a lot of boredom, so you have to entertain yourself, right? Go ahead, Blue. No, go ahead. Jump in.
I guess I was just thinking about that because I felt like boredom was something that I wasn't going to allow for myself. So I figured out ways to get involved, and I'm glad I wasn't on the same yard as you were, Robert. That sounds brutal, but in Oregon, it doesn't really roll that way most of the time, luckily. But I was wondering about the job you're doing now and if that's something you could have envisioned when you were on the inside. Was the thing you're doing a reflection of the thing you were practicing to do or dreamed of doing? Because I'm having an experience where, like, I decided to put the stuff that I tapped into on the inside, which was mostly art, and I'm having an opportunity to kind of put that out there in a way, and maybe even a way that Michael kind of brought my awareness to. Something that I always wanted to do was to create social practice and to engage people in their own creativity and engage with people. So I'm getting to do that, but I guess I'm interested to know if your business is something you could have foreseen.
I really never did see myself like detailing cars, to be honest with you. Like when I was doing it in a shop, I kind of hated it, like, honestly. But it's just because you're working with a bunch of idiots. Like, they're just blasting their music and they're running the engines indoors and they're like giving us all carbon monoxide poisoning, and you like try and tell them about it and they just don't give like a fuck, and you're just like, all right, like, I'm not gonna stay here too long. Like, you all do your thing. Like, I'm just gonna learn and I'm gonna like go my separate way, you know. It's like, I don't know, but it's always better like when you can do things on your own time, like, and in your own environment, I guess. So, and I felt the same way when I was selling cars. I loved it when I was doing it for myself. I was going to the auctions, I'd pay a couple people to come with me, we would pick up the cars. Well, first I would, you know, make sure that they're like a good investment. Go the day before, you test drive it, you know, all that good stuff. So then when you go that day, you already know what you're getting yourself into. And I used to actually enjoy selling cars when I was getting it myself. I would be part of the process, curating the inventory. I would fix it up myself. I would have a little bit of pride and, like, you know, that I, when I'm going to sell it, like, I knew that I fixed this up, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, I didn't ever pressure anyone when they would come to want to buy something. If it was the fifth person that I showed, so be it. But when you're working for a dealership, they don't treat it that way. They treat it like every person is like do or die. Like, if they're walking out the door, like, they literally want you to run after them. That takes all the fun out of the job. Like, that's like not a position I'm trying to put myself in life. It's, you don't have any control over the leads that come your way, over the inventory, over your commission, any of that stuff, like when you're working for someone else. And then you're completely disposable. How many dealerships have I worked for and they just, you know, as soon as management switches over or something, it's like, I'm looking for a new place to work because they decided to, you know, switch all the staff over. And it's like, man, you know, I get tired of, you know, having to constantly reinvent myself, it feels like. So I've wanted to be a business owner for some time, honestly. But no, I didn't see myself doing this. I wanted to, well, selling cars is something I would always want to do, but that's going to take some capital, some like investment. And like, as far as auto detailing, there's like a low entry cost. So I can start there. I can just do that and earn a little bit of money. And then I can hire people and I can walk away from it. And then I can move on to other things, and that will continue to generate money for me. So if it's like $60 an hour, if I'm hiring someone, maybe they do it for me, and then I'll maybe get $30 an hour for the work I'm not doing. You know, that's good. So
that's a good wage for, you know, someone. 30 an hour is like killer.
Especially for playing middle.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm making 60 to 100 an hour doing that kind of work, which is basically, you know, what it pays. So it's it's a lot of equipment involved, and you know, you have to have a lot of know-how. You have to know not to like damage people's stuff. And actually, it's interesting because when I went to get the insurance for the company, it's like basically covers if I cause any damage to any vehicle. It was only $280 a year. And they didn't even ask me like any questions hardly. Like it was just, there's like, yeah, yeah, no problem. We'll like cover you. It's like, all right, like no problem.
And you only had one honestly, spoon and one Tupperware for 10 years, you know? you have like one thing you get in like on the inside and it's like, oh, I got this thing. And now that I have it, it's the only one I'm getting because they're never going to sell this again on Canteen, you know? Like, you got to make that last for like forever. Like I have like a rag that I used to wipe my drawings off with. It's like a towel with like a hair tie on it. I still use it, you know? It's like, if you lose a brush.
I didn't know we were bringing props to this.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
You know, it's funny.
Right? Like, we know how to take care of stuff, right?
Sure. I mean, it's interesting we were talking about with knowledge, right? Like, you know, as you were saying this, I mean, some of the stuff, like, I don't have insurance for nothing, right? So when I was talking about Robert when he first got out, before he went in, or I was talking about when he first got out, and then Robert was saying that he had more energy prior to going in, which I also, when we were kids, you were definitely, I remember being at, like, some like book fair in elementary school and kids would be like, how much money do I have? And you would be like counting their money, and you were younger than me, so you were over there like helping people like count money and buy books. And you know, you were always had
was
good
really?
Huh,
was I really? I don't remember that.
That's, I remember it, man. I mean, right? And so it's like, that's what I'm saying, you know, you really had this certain kind of drive as just the way that you were. And so it's interesting that you're describing it as being like, you know, destabilized by the time inside. And then here you are out again, 3 years out, you're starting your own business, you're getting insurance, you're putting yourself in a position to employ other people. And that's like uncommon, as Queez is saying. It's like, you know, you really both nurtured that inside in a way. I also want to respect that. I mean, listeners, you listen to this guy talk, what do you think he'd be doing if he wasn't persecuted by the state, you know what I mean? So I think, again, the stuff you're doing is really amazing. And it's one, I mean, and also, you know, for all you guys, when we were talking about doing the recording and we were going to do it in person because Robert was coming up to visit a friend in Oregon, but they only had a brief time, so we hung out and we were hanging out. That was when he was like, you know, I'm thinking about doing the detailing. I don't know, maybe I'm going to buy this. And then, like, whatever, I call him like this week getting ready for the show and he's like, oh, I gotta work doing this detailing business. I'm like, you already got insurance for this thing? Jeez, rapid fire over there.
Yeah, I've got like 8 jobs lined up already and everything. Been networking. I've like done a few jobs and people saw the work, and then also just from people that I've met and knew around town. And yeah, and whenever they are interested, it's not just for them. It'll be for, you know, their significant other. It'll be for, you know, they've got multiple vehicles. And it's, I don't know, it's weird out here. Like, you don't, there's no way to really do anything for yourself. Like, people don't have houses or driveways, or you can't use water. Like, so, like, you can get in trouble for, like, just washing your own car. So you have to like be a business to do it. It's kind of stupid, honestly. Or you have to do it at a business's facility, like a car wash or something. So we're so close to the ocean, I guess, like, they don't want the runoff to go into the water. So, but because of that, you basically have to like pay someone else to do it for you. And there's a lot of wealthy people around here, and they value their time more. You know, they'd rather just pay someone else to do pretty much anything that they can. And that's how it gets to be in life. You know, you outsource things so that you can have the one commodity that you can't replace, which is your time, and you have the most of that. You know, that's how a lot of people are around here. They just value their time more than anything, which is a great place to be in. And that's a goal to have.
Hey, so just to rewind a little, I heard multiple car washes, let off from car lots, auctions.
Oh.
Cars is really,
yeah.
You chose that cars was going to be your profession, just kind of not in what arena?
Well, there might be some truth to that. My dad was a mechanic and I was kind of taught how to sell them, but I've always had that bit of like ambition and hustle in me. I have a knack for
it. He's talking that shit.
Give me exciting. I have a knack for seeing value in things that other people just like look over or forget about. You know, no one wants to put in the energy or effort sometimes for certain things anymore. You know, I do the same thing with real estate. So I've helped with that a lot. My dad is also an architect. He's been an architect for the past 45 years, and I've helped him kind of put blueprints through like the permit department to make sure that like everything is up to code to kind of get places built. And I've been around that my whole life as well. Yeah. And it's unfortunate because we've essentially been helping everyone else get rich. We're just putting together the blueprints and they're the one that, you know, they're the investor. They get to build the place, rent the place, sell the place, whatever. And, you know, we're just getting paid for a measly job. And it's like the whole time we've just been dreaming about it, really, like wanting to do more. I was going to actually touch base on something. I felt like somehow I forgot to say it, but my immediate family, my dad's, you know, basically like the opposite, right, of an entrepreneur. He will talk about, you know, anything and everything and kind of like put the idea out there, but there's no action behind it. So it's like everyone's afraid to kind of like put in that time. And my family had done that to me a few times. They kind of like, oh, here, do this. Or like, it's like getting started down this path. I started a business last year. I wasted months of my life on it. And I had nothing to show for it. But, you know, that's kind of part of the story, to be honest with you. People who are successful, they don't make it the first time. They really don't. You just got to keep getting up and trying again. And, you know, like something's gonna work. But I learned a lot. The last business was like asset recovery. I was helping people to get funds so basically it's like if someone has their property foreclosed on them, there will be a auction. There's gonna be a sale of that house. The whole purpose of that sale is to pay the creditor. That's it. Mm-hmm. In law, the creditor is not allowed to get anything more than what is due to them. So then there's going to be the additional funds that, well, the property sold for more than that. Well, what happens to the rest? It's supposed to go back to the original homeowner, but it doesn't. Mm. So instead, it gets tied up. I'm not going to say exactly where because, you know, I had to pay a lot of money for that information. Mm-hmm. But it gets tied up and the homeowner has to literally apply for it. And the problem is no one ever tells them that the money is there. So no one ever knows to apply for it. So the government, let's just call them the government. Obviously, it's like individual agencies, but they get to keep the money. They look at it as like it's abandoned at that point. People are losing their life's fortunes. Mm-hmm. And so I would basically just reach out to these people because it's public record. And I would just say, hey, like, are you aware the funds are there? And like, do you need help recovering it? And people you'd think they'd be happy to receive a call like that, but they're not. They're never like... You got to imagine they're at the worst place in their life. They just lost everything and they probably think that you're just like a scammer or something. Mm-hmm. They don't want to deal with you. I'd find myself talking to their ex-spouse. You know, if it was money due to the man, you know, I'd find myself on the phone with the woman and vice versa. And they are pissed off as hell, like to hear that, you know, this person that in their mind probably wronged them is owed money. They're not going to pass along the message. They just hang up the phone on you. And it's like you're in a position where you're trying to convince someone that you're providing them a service. And that's not a good position to be in. So yeah. I'm not going to do anything like that anymore. Honestly, it's unfortunate. All those funds are just going to, you know, go to not the rightful owner, but it's not a good business to be in. So they always say the boring businesses are the ones that make money. You're like selling ice.
I got a question.
Stupid stuff like that.
Blue's got a question too.
All right, Blue, you go first.
It seems to me like, Robert, that you kind of like search for these niche ideas, like things that fall through the cracks. And I guess I was wondering, like, I think we all have different drives in this group. And I'm interested to know kind of what Queez feels his is. I have a guess and maybe Michael and mine, but
Yeah.
Interesting.
Were you asking all of us, or were you asking Robert first?
Anybody who wants to share.
Let Robert go first.
What drives me? That's the question.
Sure.
You think about it. I think I might know mine.
Sure.
And maybe, I mean, it's sort of like in the room, right? And I think it's, I think in ways I have known it and been working towards it for a long time, but it's never been like more clear and like present in a way that feels tangible. But, you know, as Tin Can Phone grows and as Gallery Blue grows, I mean, I just got funded for Fred Hampton Summer Camp year two. And so I'll be able to offer to more kids than last year, totally free summer camp. We're going to hang out. We're going to eat food. We're going to learn about history. And so, and it was, you know, it's interesting. I never actually have offered a paid program. It's not even a part of my ethos. If you are experiencing my work, it was some kind of free to you. And so I just really, and it feels good, right? And so I think what drives me is like growth, prosperity, imagination, and just the general feeling good and having a full belly and being able to like do and have and enjoy that with other people. Often, I think it started with people close to me, and now it often includes people who start as strangers to me at absolutely free cost to them. I mean, so, you know, this show is a perfect example of the listeners of this show having paid for it, and the participants are being paid for it, and some true, real, I hope, some social justice action is happening as a result of it. So my drive is trying to take out the whole swarm of birds with just a pebble. Or no, I want to feed all the birds with one bag of rice. That is good for them because rice will make birds die.
Rice kills birds.
Yeah, I know. Not rice. It's bird food. It's, I'm feeding all the birds with food for birds. we all eat. Squeeze, how about you? What's driving you?
And when I thought about the question, the first thing was like, my kids. And then I thought like, nah, because ultimately I could just get a job and take care of them. And just like, the bar is set so low in the hood, like where I'm from. Just like having a job and not being in jail is like, he's did it. Mama, I fucking made it, right? I could say my kids, but like, that don't really drive me, because just doing right and being here, that's like, okay, I do that. It's the dead ones, you feel me? Like, it's the dead ones, the ones that I knew was living a certain way. And like, I'm just like my brother Ben, right?
Mm.
My brother Moon. It's like, it's people who like, we all come from the same thing, but they were able to recognize, and we jumped on our path together. We jumped on our path to growth and change together, and they got clipped. You know what I'm saying? That's why I don't do no drugs right now. Like, you know, I used to be rock star Queez. It was really the rock star with me. And all my brothers all died of overdose in 1 year. You know what I'm saying? All my brothers came home. All these is the ones I was on the yard with that changed my mind. Like Misfit, Ben called me Misfit. He told me, like, you don't fit in with them. Like, you on the yard thugging, they smoking. I'm not smoking, but I'm in the circle with y'all. Why y'all smoking? What am I there for? Like, you know, Ben just like, bro, you don't fit in with them. Like, he seen my education. He seen my potential when I didn't, right? So he's somebody that I really do shit for. Like, because sometimes I be feeling like, man, my family good. My immediate family good. You know what I'm saying? My son good. My daughter good. Like, I'm cool. But I feel obligated, though, because I'm like, bro, he really reached out to me. One, understanding prison politics and this being a white man and me being a real thug like I am, like, we don't match. We don't mix in there, right? So for him to step outside of everything he had, all the politics, and for me, too, and for us to build what we built in there, but he was like, go to school. He told me, you could write a thesis paper. I'm like, what the fuck is a thesis? You know what I'm saying? Like, what? Like, what? Like, this don't exist to me. I don't know what you're talking about. It sounded foreign, right? I found out I was smarter than I was. So it's the dead ones. It's the Moons. It's the Bens. It's like the Queezes. It's like the ones who were on this path and who like Ben said, you got to live in the world. You got to live like you would like the world to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, so for my kids, I need to change the youth, because that's who my kids is going to come up with. Like, these other dudes who's getting clipped and who's living a certain way, I got to reach them, because they kids is who my kid going to go to school with. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And if your parents ain't shit, you for sure ain't going to be shit. In a sense, that's a metaphor. You know what I'm saying? That they're not going to be educated enough to teach you the things that you need to prosper in life. And you are who my kid is going to go to school with. You are who my kid going to, you know, grow. Like, I got to worry about what your people is teaching you. So if I live a certain way and I know that my kids is living a certain way, I got an obligation to live like this and to speak this message and like my dead ones, you feel me? Like I got to push that message that they was pushing it and keep living how we was living, because it's easy to fall off, but they don't got another chance though. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't got another chance. They can't wake up and just be like, all right, I'm gonna get right today. Like they gone. So like, I'll be wrong to everything he taught me, everything they taught me, everything that I know. Like if I went back to thugging, if I went back to just banging how I was, when I know better, it's a difference if you don't know better. You know what I'm saying? It's a difference if you don't know better, but I know better. And that's the difference. My partner's a pusher. She's about the people. She's about serving the people. She taught me people over profit. You know what I'm saying? I come up where it's like, get the bag. I don't care about your feelings. You got to understand, Sacramento is a place where your life is worth crumbs out here. Like a motherfucker would kill you for less than nothing. So life don't really add up in Sacramento. Like life don't, like that shit don't mean nothing. So that's my drive. My drive is the ones who were on this mission and who got clipped, who got sidelined, and they not here to push no more. I'll be doing a disservice because I know better. And if I did anything other than what I'm doing, I'm living falsely. So, you know, overcoming my fear of being the only one. Cause I have a fear. I have a fear of stepping outside. Like it's hard to be a gangster and to really, you know, preach what's right. But being gangsters was preaching what's right, taking care of your family and doing what we supposed to do. So changing the narrative. But it's scary because you lose friends, you lose family, you lose people. And, you know, I got abandonment issues. I don't like to lose people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, very poetic.
Something that jumped out from what you said, Queez, which always is nice to hear you speak. I was just thinking about like this idea of drive, but then also this idea of like knowing better, right? Mm-hmm. Like, despite my circumstance and going to prison for something I didn't do, mm-hmm. I still knew better, right? And then after spending time like introspective, you know, like figuring out what type of person you want to be on the inside, if that's what you did, mm-hmm. or like, what do you want to improve and what do you want to do in the world? I didn't have any like ideas or plans to start a business or ideas and plans about what life would look like, but I knew who I wanted to be as a person, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and that informs all those other things in a way. It's like, when I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to do it my best. And when I'm going to do it, if I tell somebody something, I'm going to try to follow through. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the best I can. And I think that was kind of like where I enter into like the world and how I interact. But then there's also this thing of like this beautiful opportunity sometimes to do things I love, which there was a guy that got out from CRCI around the same time. And he once said, you know, doing art is a luxury. You know, I thought that was really fascinating how he put that. You know, he came up poor and struggling, and he never knew even that art or writing was a thing. He found it on the inside when he had time. Mm. And later he kind of articulated that. It's like, all right, I get that. And so to have that luxury is beautiful, but I also know it's part of like my health and my like well-being to do art and express myself. But yeah, that's something that jumped out for me.
Fascinating.
Hey, FYI, art is life-changing, by the way.
Like, we're doing it.
Yeah, and I said, you remember that wall we built, Michael? Me, you,
yeah,
Larry, yeah. Lofton, and Ben?
Yeah.
That was my first real project, like being a part of something. I was scared, like I didn't know what the to put on it, right? Art is life changing. So Blue, what you doing, like you really changing lives, bruh. You give people an avenue to express themselves. A lot of people be afraid to put their work out there, and it's great artists, and they be so scared. And through Blue Gallery, you show people, even from being on the inside, when Michael was like, we taking it out and it's going in the gallery, we like, it's going in the gallery, people from the street gonna see it. Life changing. Like people literally would like not get in trouble.
Isn't
like,
that bro, nice? That's a nice feeling. It's the same feeling as being a business owner. You're creating something and you're putting it out there into the world.
Yeah. That manifestation of like a business though, and maybe you can speak on this a little bit, Robert, but, and it's like gardening. When you plant the seed, the love that it takes to go into it. And I think if you haven't gardened, or if you're not into gardening, you're not going to truly understand those plants need love for real, or they will grow tiny and skinny. And same thing with your business. And just a little bit on top of that, you said your family were the opposite of entrepreneurs. How was it jumping in and being so passionate about being your own boss and creating a business, but also knowing, dang, my, like, my family, like, you know, it's like a, the best thing for you is also causing a rift with your family. How is that?
Yeah. Well, I grew up around everyone is just taking the traditional path to college. And really, to be honest with you, it just still puts you right back to a traditional 9-to-5. You're just maybe getting a slightly higher salary, but mm-hmm. then you also have all the student loan debt. So, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people still feel like they get stuck doing that. And the same thing, let's say you're making a little bit more per year, but that's it. Like, there's not a lot of growth from there. Mm-hmm. And so even that really isn't the path that I wanted to do for myself. Yeah, so talking about motivation, it's almost kind of like, you know, a lot of people I hear this from, they don't want to be their parents, essentially. They want to, you learn from them in the sense of like their mistakes and not to do the things that they do. And yeah, like my dad is like, he's so in his head about his ego that like, he won't even start a thing because that way you could never say he failed. You know, it's like, God forbid. And to his mind, it's better that he never started. So he's too afraid to even start. Honestly, I feel like that's something else that kind of maybe the jail system and the courts teaches you a little bit too. Like if you don't somehow find yourself throughout all of that, then yeah, you might very well stay lost because that's it. That's your time to really do your soul searching and everything. And I feel like I did. I found a lot of things during that time. I never had a good relationship with my family at all. We never wanted to talk to each other or anything. And it wasn't until I spent years away from them till we finally were like, saw some value in like wanting to talk to each other. And it's like through that only that we built a relationship with each other.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's super interesting. We are like, it's not uncommon in this show where we find like diamonds in the rough, and it's kind of like tough. We're not like, yeah, thanks, jail. But it's like, I wonder how these things could happen without being so terrible. Like in this episode, we heard everyone covered in blood, you know, like how does that part get removed? And like the part where it's like, oh, I really found my purpose and connected with my family. It's like, oh, can we figure out how to do that? Which we've got good time to explore one last topic, I think. So, you know, Robert's in this super interesting situation where they're like, I just started this business and I can't wait to grow it and move on to my next business. You're so hardcore. And when you were here, we were talking, you're like, yeah, I want multiple forms of income. You're like, I want to start an online store.
That's been drilled into me. That's, you got to understand. So my dad has dragged me along to these real estate seminars since I was a little kid. And I've been taught this stuff till I'm blue, you know, till the speaker is blue in the face. There's a concept just called MSI, multiple sources of income. I've been taught from a young age that you're supposed to have 7 sources of income, basically. So that's, yeah, I've got a plan. So one business is just a stepping stone to the other, and I'm working my way up. I want to do self-storage. So once I can put together a facility, then once I can walk away from that, then at that point, I look at it like I can start using the money to help people. That's going to be the end goal. I mean, I'll be able to retire, but I'll also be able to help people. So unfortunately, I have to be a little bit selfish first. Help myself first, and then I can help other people. But at the same time, like I do look at, it's kind of like not always true and a little bit of an imperfect and maybe, you know, a naive way of thinking about things. But I kind of think of money as like a social credit. Like it is someone saying that they value something that you do or produce. So, you know, if you're doing things to help people, the money will just come. But like that shouldn't be your motivating factor. Like just help people and then like the money will come. It'll find its way to you. So honestly, that's one of my main motivators. I just want to help other people. And a lot of times when I find myself working for other businesses, they take the humanity out of it. It's just strictly about, can we get as much money as humanly possible? and they don't care about, you know, how much strain that puts on a person. So, you know, I care about stuff like that. Like, it's not just like, you know, money at any cost, because I feel like that's what got me into trouble in the first place. So I got out of that thinking. I really did. I found myself in that way that I had a little bit of like an epiphany. I felt like everything that had happened to me was like karma. Honestly, I felt like, you know, it's like for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And it's funny because I never really felt like what I was doing was wrong at the time, but bad shit kept happening to me. So something wasn't adding up. And I just like, you know, the thing is, it'll be a little thing. It's not even like you have to do a big thing wrong. You could just like steal like a $2 whatever. It doesn't even matter. And then the consequence that'll happen to you will be huge. You'll, you know, lose your job, or like it'll be something big. So it's like it never pans out. Like, it's right. Better to just like don't take the free lunch, you know, or whatever it's called. Don't take the free lunch.
Robert, I learned in cognitive thinking. I had that experience, right? And my mentor said money has spirits. You know what I'm saying? How you get the money, you're gonna carry that with you. So if you out here in this blood diamonds, if you get money in the streets, you carrying that with you. You got away with the crime. You got away with whatever you did. But them Franklins in your pocket, that's dirty money. You gonna that it's them spirits is gonna follow you. That's why when you get it honestly, it's like, ooh, that's mine. I just got my check. That's mine. So I learned, because I always wondered, like, how does, like, I just a traffic stop, now I'm going to jail? Like, what the? Because it was the money. It's the money that I had. Like, I got away with the crime. But those spirits I carried with me every day, and I cherished them.
And that's the thing. You're right about that. I don't find myself in any bad situations anymore. It's just the nature of the universe, as it were.
I noticed, I'm paying attention when you're talking, right? I heard Michael talk too. Diamond in the rough, right? Cars, boys in blue, us, we are all in common the diamond in the rough. Like, nobody really wants the raggedy car from the auction when they first see it. But what you see what it's gonna be, and you pick that.
Yeah, I do.
Right? Nobody knew what you was gonna be. They just knew you was in trouble. Like, oh my God, he's going for all these years, and oh my God. But then you came home with that pressure. You came home with that big pressure. And that was you turning into your diamond, right? The cars, when you get them from the auction, it's a journey they got to go through. You got to tear them apart to build them back up. You got to get new pieces. You got to, you know, that's the journey for the car. For us, our stints was our journey, and then we came out diamonds. We are all the runts of the litter, the littlest ones. Nobody want us. They don't think we going to come out to be big dogs. And that's exactly what you did. So I just want to say that I recognize in your story that your attraction and your tie to the cars is your life, bruh. It's the raggediness of it, the beat upness of them cars, the uncertainty of them cars. And then you take them through that journey.
What did you call it?
What part, sir? The uncertainty.
Uncertainty.
Yeah, of the cars. And those are the things that make us reject the cars, right? People don't understand you. People, when they see us and they know what we've been through, we become our record. We become, oh my God, he was, I looked on the internet and he's, but then you go through that journey, you go through that journey and then you come home.
Well, you know, and I want to say this is a couple of things. One, wise words from Queez, the segment snuck up on us. Also, Robert was always like, so what's Tin Can Phone? I was like, yeah, you just got to get there, you know? And then, so this was the last thing we got time for is this, unbeknownst to you, this was an interview. So I'm connecting you with Artist Blue, who's trying to have a t-shirt business, but doesn't want to sell the shirts. And you over here, you want to do the business, but you don't want to make the art. And it's also like, right before the show, Blue was like, oh, look at these kicks. This is my fancy design. Oh, you some fancy dapper gentlemen. Let's get this business party started.
Right. I was going to suggest the hedgehog game, because I heard breeding hedgehogs can be really lucrative, but clothing sounds good to me. I'm in.
Did you see those artworks that we sent via text?
I saw, there were ones that were, they're all like Portland themed. A lot of them were. And then a lot of them were
Blue
like
likes a good pun. Themed.
Okay.
Yeah, those are a smatter.
Them were like, what do they call them?
Walkers.
Oh, yeah. So the walkers. So yeah, it's very, yeah, that's very niche and genre specific.
Come on, you're the sure. king of niches.
There's nothing wrong with that, with just a small audience, I feel like, for those. Sorry if I didn't like, you know.
Sort out some...
What's the genius business idea? Let's hook it all up.
I got to say one thing that I think sets us up for success. Oh, he has the genius idea.
Okay. I'm trying to set up a like an online store. I would know basically the theme or the type of items that I'd like to put in there. Yeah, I mean, if someone else has any time that they'd like to kind of put into that, we could talk about it when it's not being recorded. I don't want to put the
keep it on the DL
full.
Yes.
But yeah,
I love it.
What I would say too, if you do like a online boutique, so that you could sell other people's stuff too, like people could. Hey, yes.
I've got some ideas for this.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. That's a really interesting idea. So that way it's kind of built in that we're just profit sharing, basically.
Well, yeah, it opens you up to not only have to sell your products, then you could get contracts with the Nikes. You can get contracts with different people. If you got street people who have clothing, you got, you know, room for them. But when you like do the store, it's kind of like, what are you selling? Your stuff? And then you also helping other people.
So that you're allowed to sell someone else, you say that what you curated it. It's a special, you know, selection
well,
or how?
Well,
how
no. Listen, all you got to do is get a contract. You could just. We had an online boutique. My uncle free him, but we had an online boutique called Agape, which is unconditional love, the love of God. Agape boutique, right? So we had a contract with Adidas. We was going to the Adidas in the Nike employee store, right? And we got a contract with them, which was just, it was kind of a handwritten thing where they sold us things in bulk, right? Instead of making us, because when you're a business, you get to buy things in bulk. When we, with shoes, they give us all the same colors, all the same, just the different sizes, but you got to get the same shoe though. You know what I'm saying? But like, you could form your own contract. Like, I'm only this big, so let me get 30 shoes. And you create how that look for you. Well, our aim was streetwear. We had street artists, street rappers, and we just charged them a certain amount to carry their stuff, or we would carry their stuff and take a percentage of the sales. So as much merchandise as they had, then we would push all the merchandise. They knew they set their...
It's almost like a limited licensing agreement, just so that you essentially have permission to sell the things that you bought from them.
Well, it just depends.
I think we got to wrap it up. I think Buddy's in Mike's ear. So I think we got
to. I love it. We're starting a business right in the tail end. This is a tin can phone,
gotta
baby.
Get everybody together to
please take us on out.
What I took away from this was a little bit of diamonds in the rough. And I think one of the beautiful things for us is that I've only had like 3 bad meals in the last 3 years. It's like, anything's good. Like, we get to see the beauty in things that other people might walk past. That's a gift that we got. So
very
we gotta
much
keep surviving and seeing the world through that lens. I mean, I used to be happy. Like, I don't need to make when somebody says they should be making $25 an hour or $50 an hour, I'm like, what? Really? That's like, that's tough, man. That's a lot. That's when I went inside, that was like master's degree level, you know? So,
thank you for that, Blue. That was beautiful. That was beautiful, Blue. Thank you. Final thoughts from the Quiz: believe in yourself, invest in yourself, understand that even the ones close to you ain't gonna invest and believe into you until the world does.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Don't never let with somebody else. Their fears, people will place their fears on you about your business or about what they're scared of. You can't listen to that, man. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, believe in yourself, invest in yourself, because if you don't, who is? Ah!
Love it. Until next time.
Yay! You were listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the sources. We tell the stories from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on cable community radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you love to catch your podcast. And make sure to give us a follow over at tincanphonepodcast.com. And follow our Instagram at tincanphonepodcast. This Misfit Adi signing off.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. We live by day with the sun that illuminates our lives, powers growth, and contributes light to the natural processes that nurture our communities and ourselves. But we are reminded these days of the destructive power of the sun that evaporates our fresh water, dries our fields, and foments the wildfires that consume our forests and threaten our life and property. I associate the sun with the circumstances of climate, shifting weather patterns, extreme storms, rising water temperature, acidification, glacial melt, sea level rise, coral bleaching, shifting marine habitat, and so much more. But the moon. Yesterday signaled the full moon that, from where I sat on an island watching a spectacular sunset, rose silently and stealthily behind my back and waited patiently for my attention. The moon does that. While the sun blares and glares and demands, the moon awaits, modestly, demurely, patiently, for notice. Turning to the opposing view, then, offered another perspective on everything, the view of another waterscape of harbor and horizon and all the implication therein. The tide was full as well, and so the ocean was swollen around the rocks and islands, a kind of calm, soundless fecundity that suggested the teeming life within, and an embracing of those edges as opposed to the clash of wave and storm. There was grace to be seen there, coherent movement that suggested peace and harmony. And then there was the uncanny light. We call it surreal in its unexpected clarity, so sharp that we can see moon shadow. The vastness of ocean in that light seems so much greater to me than a sunlit day with its mist and haze. The mystery of the ocean is there to be seen and considered, what is revealed above and what lies below in depth that seems so much deeper and impenetrable than the height of the daylit sky. One becomes pensive, introspective, melancholy, depressed, if that is your wont, but the murmurs of that water support reflection, perception, solace, cure, even poetry, as antidote to the cacophony and challenge of daily living. There is no need for exclamation or conversation beyond the quiet, appreciative exhalation as an affirmative response to beauty. As the sun sets, we look for the so-called green spark, the precise moment when we feel the loss of light and the rise of darkness. That moment, seemingly always missed, is an existential measure typical of our time, marking real or psychological coordinates that declare to self and sundry that this, absolutely, is where I am. Not so in moonlight, where things appear always ambiguous, profound, less explicable, more unsure. It is perhaps the constant change within the always shifting tide, its moving nature, rise and fall and rise, that forces a continuing calculation and recalculation of one's place along a progress from somewhere to somewhere else, a journey taken without choice, thus best taken willingly and with exuberance. The tide covers as much as it reveals. The offshore rocks and ledges and the dangers of the treacherous coast are sometimes visible, sometimes not. And so we seek the reassurance of lighthouses, buoys, charts and maps, and calculated tables forward for all time to provide the navigational aid and avoidance of danger. But the tide also ebbs and flows with powerful currents that can be used to add power to a passage or even to take us through a dangerous place if we can observe and understand its natural flow. A truly remarkable seaman once showed me how the tide and the shifting volume of water around rocks could be used to move through such a tight, seemingly impossible passage without either sail or helm. It was a terrifying but astonishing demonstration of how knowledge, experience, and appreciation of natural systems can be so powerfully and successfully instructive. So thanks for the moon and its power and light, which serve to determine and illuminate our thoughts and actions with a unique, often unappreciated force. I feel optimistic and emboldened by these thoughts from my oceanside communion with the moon. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is produced by the World Ocean Observatory in association with WERU-FM, Blue Hill, Maine.
Je revois la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Éperdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là.
KBOO Portland on 90.7.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we're stepping up and taking notice of the needs around us and in ourselves. Feeling frustrated and small when it comes to the problems around you? You're not alone. No matter how big the problem is or seems, you can make a powerful impact today, right this second. All you have to do is notice and take action. You might be asking, what can I do? That's right, but this time, say it with conviction. What can I do? And then be willing to pitch in. Just like challenges can seem huge, solutions can be small.